Tune in for great advice, guests, and the information you need to take your marriage, family, and personal life to the next level.
Weekdays at noon on Ave Maria Radio.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
My guest today is Joseph Cusanka. Joseph, good friend of mine. He's the Assistant Vice President of External Affairs at Wyoming Catholic College. He's been on this show before. He's a graduate of Thomas Aquinas College and has been working for institutions of Catholic higher education ever since. He, like I, has a great interest in film, in movies, cinematography, and the importance of film as an art form. We're going to talk about Christmas movies today, and I've asked Joseph to come up with some films that you, the listener, might not know about or need to be reminded of, and I've brought a few of my own. We're going to talk about 10 films. He's got five, and I've got five, of Christmas movies we recommend, movies that you haven't ever heard of, or you've heard of and forgotten about, or you know really well and you're glad that we're talking about it. So, Joseph Cusanka, what's your first film to recommend for Christmas?
I want to start with one that I know that you like, Deal, which is Joyeux Noël, which is, I think, from 2005 or 2006.
2005, yeah. Joyeux Noël, French film.
Yes, about the kind of the unofficial ceasefire between the Germans and the French and the Scottish, I think.
Over they were Germans on one side, and there was a coalition of Allied troops on the other.
Mm-hmm. And so one of the reasons that I think it's such a on the one hand, it feels a little bit like Breaker Morant or Paths of Glory or something to me, because the movie sets up a little bit the conflict between the soldiers who feel like they're being forced to do something that they shouldn't be forced to do.
Well, they were. In World War One, being in those trenches, they certainly were being forced to do something that was very unreasonable. Don't you agree?
Right. I do agree. But one of the things that I liked about this movie is that unlike some other similar movies, like I mentioned Paths of Glory, which is the
Kirk Douglas vehicle,
where you're mostly just focused on one side, because this movie gives you both sides of that conversation and shows kind of the higher-ups reacting badly to this truce that the men kind of create for themselves. I think it gives
it's a true story in 1914. I mean... Mm-hmm. They just, and the film actually follows the historical record of a sudden Christmas Eve truce along the trenches that went for several miles back and forth.
Right. Yeah. I think they also made it, led to an American composer writing an opera, I believe.
I'll have to look that up. I didn't know that. That's a great idea for an opera.
Yeah.
Of course, music plays a central role in the 2005 French film Joyeux Noël.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
If I remember, doesn't a violinist come out and play Ave Maria?
You also have the whole story with the German and his wife, and his wife is a singer, and she wants to come.
Opera singer, played by Diane Kruger. Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's a really, I think, beautiful movie, especially for Christmas time, because there's something, you know, when you put it in that environment, it's kind of, you know, one of the most brutal wars in history, given the way that it was fought. And you take that, and you take people from both sides, and you kind of bring Christmas into the conversation, and it really influences those men, and you see there's a way in which Christmas is ingrained in kind of our cultural and religious heritages, even in a way that overcomes those conflicts that those particular men are having. Right?
Well, I mean, they started playing soccer together between the trenches.
Right, yeah.
They started sharing drinks and food and cigars, cigarettes. I actually read the book that this movie was based upon, and the movie, I must say, really tugs at the heartstrings. Wouldn't you agree?
Right. Yes, I definitely agree.
So we want to – we're going to act like we're on TV and we have a movie show, and so we're going to say that Deal and Joseph, thumbs up. You got to see Joyeuse Noël, Joyful Christmas, 2005. French film, and it is widely available. So I think I'm glad that we began with that one. What's your second recommendation, Joseph?
All right. So my second recommendation is, I think probably, I don't know, using the word favorite is tricky, but it's almost my favorite kind of Christmas themed movie, which is Ernest Lubitsch's The Shop Around the Corner.
Yeah.
Which is just a wonderful movie. I tend to categorize it in my mind with It's a Wonderful Life.
Partially, I think that's fair, but I don't think people realize it's that good.
Yes. But Jimmy Stewart, of course, plays a role in both of them. But I think the other thing that's interesting about it that always reminds me of It's a Wonderful Life is that there's some real sadness and darkness in it. That's certainly not the takeaway message, but there's some real depth to it that it doesn't really seem you kind of talk about the Lubitsch touch, and there's almost this feel of it being a little not quite as whitey.
What's the basic setup of The Shop Around the Corner?
All right, so the basic setup is that Jimmy Stewart plays this clerk or a salesman at a clothing shop in Budapest, I think it is.
Yes.
Run by a fellow called Maticek. I think.
Right.
I remember that name.
Hugo Maticek.
Right. And he is also...
Who is played, by the way, by the guy that played the Wizard of Oz.
Right.
The Wizard and the Wizard of Oz. Frank Morgan. Yeah.
Right. And Jimmy Stewart's character is always fighting with this other sales girl that's at the shop. Both of them are carrying on... By letter, interacting with each other, but they think they're interacting with different people. So it's
so they have a love thing going anonymous by letter with each other, while they're fighting with each other in the shop. And the shop girl, by the way, is played by Margaret Sullivan.
Right. So it's actually, I think they remade it later on as You've Got Mail, I think, with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan.
Yeah. So it's kind of got a whole what you might call an O. Henry feel to it, right?
Yes. But it's so aside from being it's set right around Christmas time, so all the stuff that's going on is all the business in the shop is connected to Christmas time. But what happens is while Jimmy Stewart and Margaret Sullivan are kind of bickering with each other constantly, the shop owner finds out that his wife is having an affair with somebody who works for him, and he assumes that it's Jimmy Stewart's character. It's actually somebody else. But so he's kind of constantly bringing weight to bear on Jimmy Stewart, and so you kind of add to this conflict that Jimmy Stewart and Margaret Sullivan are constantly having. Is he eventually gets fired and goes out and gets kicked out, and the same night he's supposed to meet up with this woman that he's been writing letters to for months and months and months and months. So.
But does it have a happy ending?
It does have a happy ending.
Okay. Well, we don't want to recommend any Christmas movies that don't have a happy ending.
Right.
But I would put this in my top 50 movies of all time.
It's a wonderful movie.
So, once again, Deal and Joseph, thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
1940, The Shop Around the Corner. Now, I'm going to jump in here and make a recommendation, and you can... can react. In 1933, Frank Capra made a movie entitled Lady for a Day. And this movie was based upon a story by Damon Runyon, and it starred two very famous silent film stars, Warren William and Mae Robeson, but the plot is one that everyone knows from the remake of the film, the very famous Christmas movie called Miracle on 42nd Street. And the basic storyline is that Apple Annie, you remember in the remake, was played by Bette Davis, here by Mae Robeson, has a daughter in Spain. And she, Apple Annie is basically lives on the street as a beggar, and has been writing to her daughter in Spain that she's a member of New York High Society. And suddenly she gets a letter that her daughter is coming to New York with her new fiancé and father, and the family is part of Spain's aristocracy. So this is when she gets help from Dave the Dude in the remake. That's Glenn Ford. In the original 1933 Frank Capra film by Warren William, Dave the Dude organizes all of his criminal buddies to create a faux home, a palatial home for Apple Annie to receive her daughter and her fiancé and so forth, to play out the lie that she is a member of high-class New York society. And have you ever seen this version of this story, Joseph?
You know, I never have. I've seen the remake, which I remember.
And the remake's very good.
Uh-huh. But it has Peter Falk in it, and I remember he's a favorite of mine, so I remember that. But I've never seen the original.
And it's a wonderful film, and I think that William Warren is far better, frankly, than is Glenn Ford in the same movie. And I want to recommend to people that take a look at the 1933 Christmas film made by Frank Capra, entitled Lady for a Day. And I think you'll find, and particularly the Dave the Dude character, William Warren is a really masculine, tough guy, who his transformation to become the caretaker of Apple Annie is really quite moving in a way that you don't quite get in the Glenn Ford, Bette Davis remake. So, Joseph, your assignment then is, one of your assignments, is to watch Lady for a Day. Just came out on Blu-ray and DVD.
That's great. So I remember when I actually saw the remake thinking, oh, I should go back and look at the original. I never have. So I can't give the movie a thumb up, but I'll give the recommendation a thumb up.
And by the way, I misspoke when I called the remake A Miracle on 42nd Street. The remake is Pocket Full of Miracles. Pocket Full of Miracles. 1961. Also directed by Frank Capra. So he remade his own film.
Movie. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think he did. Frankly, I think he did better the first time. I want to recommend another film, which I know you've seen and you would agree with, and that's the great film by John Ford entitled Three Godfathers, 1948.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is a John Wayne film, but it's a John Wayne film like you've never seen before, maybe saw since in some of his later films. It's the story of three bandits, criminals on the lam. They are John Wayne, the famous Mexican actor Pedro Armendariz, and Harry Carey Jr., the son of the famous silent film actor Harry Carey. They ride into the town of New Jerusalem, Arizona. Now that should be the key to you right away, that there's a religious thing to this film, and to rob the bank. But the process, Harry Carey gets wounded, and he loses his horse, and they ride out of town unsuccessful, but they're pursued by Ward Bond, who plays the sheriff. And when they get out into the desert, and they've escaped the posse and Ward Bond, they run into a wagon sitting out in the desert that has obviously been the target of Indians. And they look inside and they find a dying woman and her newborn baby. Now, this is all happening on Christmas Eve. And the woman played by Mildred Natwick is just brilliant. She doesn't have a lot of lines or very much in the movie, but she really is powerful as she hands her baby over to these three, you know, very dirty, very, you might say, guilty and worried bandits. And they swear to save the infant, even at the risk of their own lives. And if you recall, Joseph, that in the process of this transformation, Pedro, especially the Mexican actor, Pedro Armendariz, he pulls out his rosary. There's a lot of prayer. John Wayne is not religious. Harry Carey is somewhat religious, but it's really the Mexican character who gives witness to his Catholic faith that inspires both John Wayne and Harry Carey Jr. to really save this child regardless of the cost. Is that how you recall the film as well?
I think that's fair. It's been far too long since I've seen it, but that was very much my recollection as well, too. I remember that's a very, of course, you mentioned New Jerusalem, but...
I rewatched it recently, and I was struck by the centrality of the role of Pedro Armendariz. He really carries the religious theme more than the more famous actors, John Wayne or Harry Carey Jr. And those of you who are listening who have either watched it or will watch Three Godfathers will recognize this actor because he's done a lot of American film work, he's very recognizable. By the way, another thing about Three Godfathers is that the cinematography is just unbelievable.
I know, it's gorgeous.
Shot in Monument Valley, a favorite place of John Ford, by Wynton Hoke, who also shot The Searchers, and she wore a yellow ribbon, so that when you watch Three Godfathers, you have a visual treat. I mean, and you get shots of the night sky that suggests the star over Bethlehem. And the whole John Ford was a practicing Catholic, a serious one. It comes out in more than one film, including a film based upon the famous Graham Greene film, Graham Greene book, about the so-called whiskey priests in Mexico, and called The Fugitive is the name of the film. But I want to give John Ford's Three Godfathers a really strong recommendation. Would you agree?
I would definitely agree. Interestingly, that one's a remake also.
That's right. There was a silent film in 1960.
Which starred Harry Carey, not Harry
the father,
but the father, who was good friends with Ford, and that's one of the reasons Ford wanted to remake it.
Oh, yeah.
But I think at least Ford made a short silent version of it also back, I think, in the 1940s.
I love that. Thanks for digging that up. So we've recommended two of mine and two of yours, so I'm throwing the ball back to you. What's your third recommendation?
All right, I'm going to go with this may not be quite to the letter of the project, but certainly to the spirit, which is I'm going to recommend The Christmas Carol. Not probably the more common version of it.
The Christmas Carol, which one?
That's what I'm going to say. So I was thinking Scrooge is probably the only character who could give Sherlock Holmes a run for his money for most performed on screen. But this is actually the version that I would recommend would be the 1971 short animated version, which was actually executive produced by Chuck Jones, the
famous animator.
Yes, and it has the same voice cast as Scrooged, which was made a little earlier. So it has Alistair Sim plays Scrooge.
Oh, his and, Alistair Sim's voice is in it?
Yes, he does Scrooge, and Michael Horton does Marley, just like in Scrooged also. So it uses some of the same cast, but it's animated, and it was actually made for television, and it led the Academy to change its rules about what could qualify for an Academy Award. So it won Best Animated Short, but then they said, wait, this is made for TV. You have to actually make
it. So this is actually considered a TV short, and it was made in 1971, directed by Richard Williams. And you've also got Michael Redgrave
mm-hmm.
voice in this. So you've got a real stellar lineup of great British actors. Michael Horton, Diana Quick. And what? So I've never seen this. So why is it so good?
Well, so there are two reasons, I think. One is because I'm just a huge fan of animation. So I'm drawn to that kind of thing. And I remember probably the first version of the Christmas Carol I ever saw was the one with Scrooge McDuck, the Disney version with Scrooge McDuck when I was little. So there's always
Scrooge
been something,
McDuck, okay.
Right. There's always been something about that story, especially when it kind of jumps as it jumps through those three time periods. There's something that feels, there's something very fantastical about it. And the animation really plays on that in a way which is harder, I think, in most of the live action versions. So the animation for this is really kind of unusual. There's some real surrealism in it, and there's some kind of abstract stuff, and it's beautiful. It reminds me very much of the animation of The Man Who Planted Trees. Right. So
based on John Jono's novel.
Right. So there's something that looks almost it's soft. There's a softness to it.
Now, is this available to see somewhere on DVD or Netflix or what?
I'm sure there's a DVD version. I wanted to remind myself of this, so I actually watched it again yesterday, and I just found it on YouTube.
Oh, so it's free on YouTube?
Yes, just floating around.
And is the copy good? Is the copy actually?
There are different versions. I don't know that there's a very good original print. So none of the.
Well, I'm sorry to say that there was a DVD of this 1971 film, TV film, but presently is not available.
Mm.
Now, what I'm going to do when we get off this interview is go and look and see on Amazon in the UK and see if it's available over there. But if it's on YouTube, that means that everyone will get a chance to see it nonetheless.
Yeah, at least certainly get the flavor for it. Yes.
But as you say, if the resolution is pretty good, then there's no reason to spend any money. We just go watch it. How long is it?
It's only about 25 minutes long. So it's maybe half an hour at most.
I'm surprised that they. Well, let me ask you this question: of the conventional Christmas carols,
mm-hmm.
of the ones that actually star people, actors,
right?
What do you recommend for that? Which Christmas carol do you like the best?
I don't. The live action one that sticks out the most in my mind is only partially live action. It's the Muppets one because my kids love it.
That's with Michael Caine.
Right, and he's wonderful in it.
I'm going to give you a big agreement, a thumbs up on that.
All right.
I think that's one of the very best.
Often I struggle with the Muppet things because I feel like the singing is out of place, and it fits a lot better in this one. It fits a lot better for me for some reason. I don't know exactly what it is. Maybe it's that fantasticalness again. But I've always really liked it, and the kids and I watch it very regularly. So,
well, I think the Christmas Carol, though, aside from the animated version,
mm-hmm.
and aside from the Muppet version, is either the 1951 Alistair Sim,
right,
which is a great film, or this 1938 version, which holds up quite well with Reginald Owen.
Right.
Have you ever seen that one?
I have. It's been a while now. The Alistair Sim version definitely sticks in my mind more. I think that's a really nice companion piece with the animated one because you have a lot of the same cast there. But
and there's no reason why we can't watch multiple Christmas carols at Christmastide.
That's allowed. I think that's definitely allowed.
So we're coming up to a break here in a second, and we'll be back with more recommendations. But I want to kind of summarize what we've recommended so far. Joseph Suzanka, who's Assistant Vice President of External Affairs at Wyoming Catholic College and who has his own website now, we'll talk about that later, has recommended Ernest Lubitsch's The Shop Around the Corner, starring Jimmy Stewart and Margaret Sullivan, a French film, Joyeux Noël, 1905, about the historically true telling of the peace between the trenches in World War I on Christmas Eve in 1914, and also the animated TV version of The Christmas Carol with Chuck Jones' involvement, but also the voices of Alistair Sim and Michael Redgrave. After the break, Joseph has a couple more recommendations. I've recommended Frank Capra's first version of the Apple Annie story, Lady for a Day, 1933, and John Ford's Three Godfathers, 1948. And I'm going to have a couple of more recommendations, really good ones, I should say, when we come back from the break. So all of you are listening. We're talking about Christmas movies, those you may know, those you may not, and we'll be back right after this message.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
Our individual and corporate relationship with our Lord, our relationship with the church, the precepts of the church, our relationship with the world and the culture that surrounds us. Father John Ricardo discusses these things and more, all from the Catholic perspective on Christ is the answer. Listen to Christ is the Answer Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday afternoons at 5, and Sunday mornings at 11 on 990 WDEO, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the Answer.
Christ is the Answer is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
This is Lavinia Spirito for Catholic Way Bible Study. In the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus encounters a rich young man who seems very serious about following him. But when the wealthy young man is confronted with the need for total detachment from his possessions, he is saddened. He cannot go through with it. Discipleship is not comfortable. It is costly. Following the Lord Jesus Christ is both the easiest and the hardest thing we will ever do. Easy, because we were created for friendship with him. Hard, because we need to deny our own ways and opinions and live a countercultural witness to the kingdom. Through our free will, we choose to follow him. Through his church, we are equipped. And by his grace, he will see us home with him.
Catholic Way Bible Study. Peace, power, purpose. Find out more at cwbs.org.
I'm back with Joseph Suzanka. We're talking about Christmas movies and having a great time. Joseph lives out in Wyoming. He's the Assistant Vice President of External Affairs at Wyoming Catholic College, a Thomas Aquinas College graduate, and a film buff, a film addict, just like I am. So Joseph has recommended three. I've recommended two. So I'm going to recommend my third before handing the ball back to Joseph. And this is a film that I recommend in spite of the fact that it's going to be hard to see because I'm so fond of it. I think it's an extremely powerful film with a religious message delivered in such a, I want to say, impactful way. The film is entitled The Holly and the Ivy. It came out in 1952. The director, you've never heard of him, because I haven't, George Moore O'Farrell, made a great job. But it stars Ralph Richardson, who is an Episcopalian priest, an elderly Episcopalian priest, with his three children, played by Celia Johnson, that you might remember from Brief Encounter, David Lean, Margaret Leighton, very well-known British stage and film actor, and Denham Elliott, who became famous later on in a number of films. This was his first film. And it's a story about the three children who come home to their father, named Martin, at Christmas, and the drama that ensues. The father is a crusty old, kind of self-righteous, and non-supportive, distant, detached man. And the kids, Jenny, Margaret, and Mick, all have their issues with their dad. The son is kind of a fop, even though he's in the military. His way of dealing with his dad is just like not taking anything seriously. Margaret, played by Margaret Leighton, is a very successful theater actress, beautiful, well-groomed, beautifully coiffed, and so forth. Celia Johnson, however, who's the eldest, has been taking care of her father for quite a long time and is angry that her sister Margaret hasn't made any effort to join in and do her part and either have her two aunts who are also live nearby. And, of course, the son is unable to. Well, all of this comes to a head one night when Mick, the son, takes his sister Margaret, that is the stage actress, out to the pub and gets her very, very drunk. And it comes out that she has a secret. And her secret is that she had an affair with an American airman during World War II, and she had a child who died shortly after being born. And that has led to her, what is kind of a, being a functional alcoholic. And the drama is that this gets revealed to the old man, the parson, Father Martin, Ralph Richardson. And the fear is, of course, that he's going to completely condemn her and leave the house. But there is this amazing transformation that comes forth in stages. It's not instantaneous. But this revelation of this secret of his daughter forces him to look at himself, and eventually he embraces his daughter in spite of her sin, he would call it, in spite of having a child out of wedlock and the subsequent alcoholism. And in terms of a family drama taking place at Christmas, that involves redemption, particularly in a family, I want to strongly recommend The Holly and the Ivy. If you can see it, it's often, not often, but it is broadcast from time to time on Turner Movie Classics, TMC. I would hope they would put it in the dock for some time during the Christmas season. If you can order a DVD from Amazon UK, there is a DVD, but it's only going to play on a multi-region DVD player. In other words, it's not going to play on your standard DVD player. Those of you who have multi-region DVD players will be able to watch the DVD. Now, Joseph, does that interest you, the way I summarize that film?
It very much interests me. I think I would be interested, given the cast alone. I love that cast. It sounds wonderful.
Yeah, and it's based upon a wonderful play by Antelé de Grunewald, which was very successful on the London stage before it was made into a film. And again, it's going to be hard to find, but I want our listeners to know about The Holly and the Ivy, 1952. Joseph, what's your next recommendation?
All right, so my next recommendation is a little bit like recommending The Christmas Carol, which is something which is commonly associated with Christmas, but I don't know that most people are familiar with this version of it, which is The Nutcracker, which is the version done by Carol Ballard, who I know most because he did Black Stallion.
That's a beautiful film.
It's a beautiful film. And but one of the interesting things about this version is it's based on a production by the Pacific Northwest Ballet, and it was designed by Maurice Sendak.
Oh, the great the illustrator.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's really beautiful to look at. I think Ebert said it's a respectable version of a cultural artifact, and I don't think that's entirely untrue, but it's really, really beautiful to look at. And the music alone is something that I associate so strongly with Christmas in my mind, kind of growing up. It was just Christmas time.
It is a ballet on film.
It's the actual ballet, yes.
Okay, so this is 1986. It is available on DVD. I haven't looked to see if it was available on Netflix or Hulu.
I saw it originally on Netflix. That's how I saw it. I don't know if it's streaming there anymore.
The ballet company is Pacific Northwest, mm-hmm. and the as you said, the director has already proved. Is that a man or a woman, Carol?
It's a man.
Okay. With The Black Stallion, which has really become kind of a classic.
That's it.
And
that's
as you perfect. Say, the design of the sets involved the great Sendak.
Mm-hmm.
Now, okay, it's ballet. It's dancing.
Right. Right.
What experience have you had having your kids sit down and watch ballet dancers jump around?
The first thing I would say is, if you're going to do that, probably use a production which is based on Maurice Sendak, because that's going to help a lot.
Yeah.
Very fantastical. For me, it just depends. It varies very much depending on the children. Some of my kids.
I mean, at what age do you think the kids would begin to respond to watching this?
You know, I don't know how much they would pick up on the ballet part of it, but it's very colorful and very vibrant and very. The music is very engaging. There's a lot of movement.
It's only 89 minutes.
Right.
So that means it sounds to me like it's slightly abridged version.
Right. It's not the entire ballet. I don't know.
I mean, I find the entire Nutcracker, frankly, a little tedious. I know that's heresy. I mean, I'd much rather see an 89-minute Nutcracker.
Right.
You know, then it's
said it,
two and a half hour one.
Myself, so I don't have to get in trouble, but I feel very much the same way. And I find that in many ways my younger children actually enjoy it more.
By the way, the music is conducted by Sir Charles Mackerras, a great conductor, London Symphony Orchestra. Mm-hmm. And according to notes I have here, is that the director, Ballard, had all kind of fights with Sendak over the design.
That seems likely.
But he said, Sendak said that the director often won. After all, he was working in a medium in which I was a novice.
Right.
So I have not seen, but I will see the Nutcracker, the motion picture, 1986 Christmas film. It is the Ballet of the Nutcracker, an abridged edition. It's got great dancing and great music. And Joseph Susanka says it's delightful, and so we're going to give that a thumbs up and add it to our list of recommended Christmas films. Now, I want to get into something a little more conventional because I know that I was shooting pretty high when I recommended The Holly and the Ivy. I'm gonna recommend the last film made by the great John Huston, a film called The Dead, and that I don't mean to be ironic there. 1987, The Dead is based upon one of James Joyce's best short stories from the volume called The Dubliners. As most people know, Joyce began his career as a poet and a short story writer, publishing The Dubliners before he went on to his famous series of novels, Portrait of an Artist as a Young Man, Ulysses, and then, of course, Into the Unknown. the non-understandable part of James Joyce. But this film is just gorgeous. It is so touching. Have you ever seen it, Joseph?
I have seen it. It is beautiful.
I mean, doesn't it just stick in your memory?
It did, especially for me, Angelica Houston does.
Yeah, and of course you've got now Tony Houston is the screenwriter, who is John Houston's son. Mm-hmm. Angelica Houston is the daughter and really has the main role. And the setting is, again, a Christmas Eve, and is often evidently a tradition in Ireland, especially pre-television and pre-technology, was to have your family and friends over to the house, and everyone would take their turn either reciting or singing or playing an instrument or dancing and having a great time. And at this particular event, a tenor, a very famous Irish tenor, arrives, who in fact is a famous Irish tenor, Frank Patterson, during the 80s, one of the great Irish tenors. And he sings a song that just, I mean, brings tears to your eyes in the context of the film. Do you remember that, Joseph?
I do remember that, yes.
It's just so beautiful. It's painfully beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It is beautiful.
But what do you think is the real drama? And I'm putting you on the spot. You didn't know you were going to have to talk about this. What do you think is the real drama at the heart of John Houston's The Dead?
I'm not quite sure what you're angling for.
I think it's the husband and wife. The relationship between Angelica Houston and her husband, Donal McCain.
Right.
I think they're unhappy. I think, there's a lot of Christmas movies, some we've already mentioned, that serve to kind of reveal the fissures, the things that are missing in family life. And, I mean, she is reminiscing about, for example, he's reminiscing about a lost love named Greta.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also reminiscing about her first lost love when she was growing up in Galway. And there is a moment as she is confessing to him about this lost love, that the husband named Gabriel literally has an epiphany. He's looking out the window. The snow is falling all over Ireland. I'm almost tempted to go find the passage from Joyce's Dead and read it, because it's just so gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And watching the snow, and then there's a voiceover where Gabriel, played by Donal McCain, talks about what he has seen at that moment, which reunites him in love with his wife, played by Angelica Houston. Do you recall that?
I do recall that. I've never read the original, but I've never read the book. Is it considered to be the short story? I guess, is it considered to be a fine adaptation?
Oh, yes. Remember John Houston also did Flannery O'Connor's Wise Blood.
Yeah.
But, of course, John Ford had done The Quiet Man, an Irish film. He had done several movies, one with Tyrone Power, set in Ireland, shot in Ireland. He was Irish Catholic to the bone. And since he's dealing with a short story, I would say it's even more of a close adaptation than is his Wise Blood.
Mm-hmm.
This is an absolute must movie. You have to see this film. And since it's available on DVD, and I'm sure probably on either Netflix or Hulu, I just want everybody to see it. I'm just going to say that out loud. So, Joseph, what is your last recommendation?
All right, so my last recommendation is a movie that I almost always forget is actually a Christmas movie. I think because it was actually, for some reason, it was released in May. And that's Millions by Danny Boyle.
Now, Danny Boyle's famous for what?
He's famous, well, to some extent now, he's famous, I would guess, probably for Slumdog Millionaire. But he was originally famous for Trainspotting. He's made a number of zombie movies as well, so it's not necessarily who you might expect for a Christmas movie.
Well, Slumdog Millionaire was just outstanding.
Right. But this is a movie about a little boy, and it's really interesting because he interacts with saints all the time, and they have an actual physical presence in the movie.
Saints, you say?
Yes.
Okay.
Joseph, and he's constantly talking to them, and that becomes important. Or, I mean, it's important to start with, but it becomes particularly important towards the end. But what happens is he has this little fort that he's built, and he's in it one day, and they come and they talk to him, and he talks to them, and he's very, very imaginative. And one day, this huge satchel of money just lands out of the blue in his little fort, and he assumes that they gave it to him, that they sent it to him. And it turns out that's certainly not true. He thinks that's how it...
This sounds pretty Irish, too.
Yes.
The pot of gold thing, you know?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And it's really neat. It kind of leads up to them. His father's played by James Nesbitt. He's really wonderful. And it kind of leads to them. They try to figure out where this money came from and what to do with it. Finally, his father becomes involved and thinks, how could you possibly have gotten all this money? And eventually, they discover it. What happens is it's taking place right when they switch from, when they're switching from pounds over to euros. And there were a bunch of robbers who just kind of took advantage of that to grab the money when it was being taken away to be burned, basically grab the old pounds, and then they could just convert those into euros, and they would be rich. And so the father finally figures out what's going on and decides that they should just be able to... There's been this tragedy in the family, which is that his wife has died, or the little boy's mother has died. So he feels like this is an opportunity for him to kind of give them this glorious Christmas. And it's a really neat story about...
Well, how does the contact with the saints figure in? I mean, unless you're afraid to give away the ending.
Probably not. If you haven't, if somebody has not seen it, then they should probably watch it first, and then then they could hear more of what.
Would you say the film is just directly faith affirming?
Oh, certainly, I would say that. Yes, definitely.
Well, then, I mean, I wonder why this is not a movie that comes up more often in discussion of Catholic or Christian films.
You know, I'm not sure. I remember at the time when it came out, the saints are not always portrayed
piously.
That's the way to say it. There you go. That's exactly what
Well, I, you know, and good for Danny Boyle. I mean, come on.
But I think that probably has something to do with it.
So there's a little naughtiness in it.
Right. I'm trying to remember, one of them smokes, for example.
Oh, come on. If that disqualifies it, then we're all done for.
Well, it certainly doesn't disqualify it. But I actually enjoyed that aspect of it myself. But
so you're going to go out on a limb, and you're going to recommend Danny Boyle's Millions,
yes.
In spite of the fact that one of the saints is smoking, and I'm going to join you in that recommendation. And this is one I own. I haven't seen it yet, but
really?
I'm looking forward to watching it. It's going to be a great treat. My son and I will watch it together.
The little boy in particular is really, really wonderful.
Yeah, his name, I believe, is Alex Attell.
Right.
And he's a very handsome young man, but, of course, the picture is from 10 years ago, so he's probably all grown up by now and probably not handsome anymore, but who knows. Now, I've got another one for you.
All right.
And this is hard. This is a hard one to even make sense of. This is a Finnish film entitled Rare Exports, A Christmas Story. It came out in 2010. And actually, you see it around. You see it in bins of $5 films or $5 Blu-rays. I think it was a kind of a blockbuster success for a foreign film. Late Roger Ebert, gave it 3 out of 4 stars and called it a rather brilliant lump of coal for your stocking. He says it's a Santa Claus story crossed with The Thing, which, of course, The Thing has been made 3 times, and Thing from Outer Space. And, the plot is basically this. It opens, and by the way, it's beautifully shot. It's shot a lot of it at night in the snowy forests of Norway on a reindeer farm. And it's just beautiful. There's a reindeer farm, and nearby you have Americans who are digging a big hole. They're causing a lot of noise, and they're really annoying the Finnish natives living there on the ranch. But where the Americans are blasting away with dynamite, there is a huge mound that looks sinister. Now there's a young boy named Pietari and his friend Juuso who live on this reindeer farm, and Pietari has been told by his father not to go out and watch the Americans blowing up this area with dynamite, especially not at night. And Roger Ebert says he's a kind of a Finnish Ralphie, like from the Christmas Story.
Mm-hmm.
But the legend is that this big mound holds a frozen monster, and that this monster was once only contained by being frozen in this big block of ice. Well, the Americans with their dynamite end up releasing the monster, who turns out to be Santa Claus. But it's not any kind of Santa Claus that you've ever seen in film. This is a savage Santa Claus, a scrawny man with a beard, who ends up in a Santa suit, but only really to get warm. And the story then ends up about the capture and taming of wild Santas, particularly this Santa. So it's not like your faith-filled, faith-affirming Christmas film, but it is a film that is beautifully made. It's very creative, and it's kind of a Christmas film for those of us who want something different, who want a kind of different take, and are willing to watch how a Christmas film can be made into a quasi-horror story, but which really ends up very affirming of the notion of Santa Claus and Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And if that didn't confuse you, I can go on. But it is really, really worth watching and beautifully filmed.
I will have to watch it. I am not a horror person myself. But I will, on the strength of his recommendation, I'll give it a watch. So.
Well, again, let me repeat. It is entitled Rare Exports, A Christmas Story. It's Finnish, 2010. And let's go through. What are your 5 recommendations?
All right, so I recommended, what's the order we're looking for here? I recommended... pronounce the French for me.
Joyeux Noël.
Joyeux Noël. Shop Around the Corner. The Christmas Carol, the 1971 animated short version. Carol Ballard's Nutcracker the Movie. And Millions by Danny Boyle.
And I recommend Frank Capra, Lady for a Day, 1933. John Ford, 3 Godfathers, 1948. The Holly and the Ivy, 1952, The Dead, 1987, and Rare Exports, 2010. And Joseph Suzanka, thank you once again for being a guest on Church and Culture.
Thanks so much, Steele, for having me.
And thank you, all of you who are listening. Please join me again this time and on this day next week for Church and Culture.
If you have any comments or questions about Church and Culture, you can contact Deal Hudson at dhudson@avemariaradio.net.
On Putting on the Mind of Christ this week, Sister Ann Shields helps to prepare us for a fruitful Advent season.
John the Baptist told us very clearly, prepare the way of the Lord, make straight his paths. John the Baptist was the forerunner of the Messiah, the one who went ahead of him to prepare the way. In a season of Advent, each of us needs to take the posture of how can I in my life prepare the way of the Lord.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting on the Mind of Christ. Sister Ann Shields helps us prepare the way for the Lord as we continue to prepare ourselves for his nativity during the remainder of this Advent season. Listen to Putting on the Mind of Christ this and every Sunday afternoon at 3, encoring Saturday afternoons at 6 on 990 WDEO, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet. Here's a Family Minute with child psychologist Dr. Ray Guarendi from Ave Maria Radio.
Should you give your kids the reasons behind everything you do? Some experts say you should. Explain to them in minute detail your rationale for being a parent. And not only in minute detail, but in frequency that approaches the speed of light. My opinion is a little different on this. I think you need to give kids the reasons behind what you do once. Maybe twice, if you think you weren't understood the first time around. But after that, as any parent can tell you, over-reasoning gets you into arguments. If, in fact, Sherlock truly wanted to know the reasons behind why he has to be in before dark, and you explained yourself relentlessly over the course of an hour and 36 minutes, wouldn't you think that at least once at the end of this Socratic-like dialogue, he would look at you and go, oh, Mother, I've just been so blind. That makes such perfect sense. Why didn't you explain that to me earlier this year? I most certainly would have accepted it, given that you've, with such clarity, told me where you stand as a parent. Will you be understood by your kids? Not always. Why? Because they're kids. And you're the parent. I'm Dr. Ray.
Fully Alive. Reflections on the scripture readings of today's Mass with Father Pat Egan, chaplain of Ave Maria Radio.
It's been a year of many distractions. The horror of terrorism, armed conflict, and natural disaster. And now we have the Christmas barrage of insistent advertising. Today, Holy Mother Church gives us yet another urgent voice clamoring for our attention. It's John the Baptist. Prepare a way for the Lord. Make his path straight. Prepare ye the way of the Lord. How do you react to that proclamation? What stops that particular voice from being drowned out by all the others? Why is it so important anyway that the Lord's coming our way? What will convince us that we have to make proper preparations if we really want the Lord to come to us personally? Advent calls for confession and penance. That's totally out of step with the jolly mood of Christmas. We can